Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, my money-saving comrades. My name's Graham Clark, and I'm excited to be with you again this week on the Money Stepper Savings Challenge podcast. This is a podcast made by the Money Steppers Savings Community for the Money Stepper Savings Community. It's designed to help us all achieve the goals that we've set for the 2015 Savings Challenge and make that journey to financial freedom much more friendly and enjoyable. Are you ready? Let's get going. Ahoy there, my little money-saving mateys, and welcome back to the Money Stepper Savings Challenge podcast. We're rolling on nicely now. We're up to episode 8, and today we have an interview for you. An interview with one of the participants in the Money Stepper Savings Challenge, Chad Vorter. He is the founder of the excellent site Early Retirement Ahead, and he's here today to talk to us about his goals that he set in the challenge, his progress throughout January, and just to answer any other questions that I decide to ask of him. So today's episode is called Early Retirement Ahead. You'll find the show notes at moneystepper.com/early retirement ahead, or one word. The running order, as we spoke about last week, is going to be a little bit more structured, so we're going to start with a quote. After that, we'll go into the bulk of the interview with Chad. And then finally, we'll finish up with a good piece of financial advice, an article that I've seen in the news this week, and equally a very bad piece of financial advice we've seen, an absolute horror show. So today is the 5th, or maybe the 6th, or 7th or 8th, depending on when you're listening, of February. But this means that January is over. The first month of the 12 months of the Money Stepper Savings Challenge for 2015 has finished. How did you all get on? It seems so far from the submissions that I've received that everyone has started nicely. I'm personally myself a little bit behind my goals, but we'll speak about that in a later podcast. That's to do with the timing of my income, because I'm currently working freelance. But for everyone else who submitted so far, and to date that's around about 30 to 40% of people in the challenge, everyone seems to have started off well. Which brings us nicely to our quote. A quote is all about how you start and how you move on. It's a quote from a gentleman called Jim Ryan. Now, Jim Ryan was an athlete. He was the first high school student to run a 4-minute mile. He was also a silver medalist in the 1500 meters in the 1968 Olympic Games. He was a member of the U.S. House of Representatives in the late 90s and throughout the noughties. He's a man who's been around a little, and he said, great quote, "Motivation is what gets you started. Habit is what keeps you going." Now, it's clear that you all have the motivation that gets you started, because you're all motivated to join the Money Stepper Savings Challenge, or you wouldn't have done it. And that's what got you started this year, working towards the goals for 2015 and hopefully onwards for the rest of your financial future. Once that flame of motivation extinguishes somewhat, it's the habit that keeps you going. So what we're trying to do here is trying to build a habit of documenting our financial journey, concentrating on our financial position and making positive changes to lead towards a better financial future. And one of those habits is submitting your results every month. And that brings us nicely to the fact that generally the deadline, very soft deadline, but a deadline we like to set for people submitting their goals is the 5th of February. for the month of January, and so on the 5th of March for the month of February, and the 5th of every month thereon. If you haven't already, it would be great if you could head on over to moneystepper.com/submit-your-results. Obviously, the hyphens are actual hyphens rather than the word hyphen. Or if you just have a look on the website, it's very easy to navigate to the page where you submit your results. And you can just let me know how you got on so that in about 3 or 4 days, maybe a week or so, we can pull together a nice post summarising how everyone's getting on, what common challenge everyone's facing, and hopefully we can build a nice bit of discussion around that. Great, so let's not mess around. Without any further ado, let's crack on and have a chat with Vought. I actually sent an email to him by accident calling him Vought a few months ago. And it turns out he's okay with that. It was his nickname. I actually made an error. I thought it was his first name, so it was a funny first name. And we had a bit of a discussion over how Vought, is it spelt like thought, or is it spelt like pout, vault? but it turns out it is Vought. It's Chad Vorter, I think. And we could speak to him about a number of things, about his current financial position, his January results against his goals. We get on to the topic of solar panel installation, all other kinds of things. So here we go. Here's our interview with Chad. Great. So today I'm joined on the Money Stepper Savings Challenge podcast by Chad Vorter from Early Retirement Ahead. Hey, Chad.
Hi, thanks for having me.
That's our pleasure. Thanks for being part of the Money Stepper Savings Challenge community. It's great to have you involved. Today, we're inviting you on the podcast. If you could just let us know something about yourself. So who are you? Where do you come from? What site do you run if you own a site? And if you do, why did you start that site?
Sure. I'm actually a Kansas-born Midwesterner, and I moved to California about 5 years ago. And what I've been in finance pretty much my whole career, and currently I'm a chief financial officer for some nonprofit health clinics. I started Early Retirement Ahead about 6 or 7 months ago as more of a creative outlet for me. The goal was to kind of put my thoughts out there. I teach financial acumen classes and have helped people with their credit and budgeting, even investment, amateur investment advice for quite some time.
Okay.
And just thought it'd be good to kind of put some of that stuff out there and let people be able to read it. And, you know, I enjoy the writing process, so it's been fun so far.
That's a great idea. So kind of moving what you're doing in real life onto online and jotting down those ideas.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's great. And you use the site as a tool for accountability as well. So you kind of put your monthly updates on there of how you're doing for your, well, against these goals, I suppose, but also just generally for your own finance.
Yeah, I've tried to do that. One of the big things with personal finance bloggers is how much to share and how much not to. And I'm still kind of figuring that out for myself. But at least putting things out there, like, you know, what I'm trying to do with savings and investments and writing about travel points, rewards, that kind of stuff. Really, at this point, whatever comes to mind for me.
Okay. Well, if I'm too intrusive with any of my questions into your personal finances, just tell me where to go today.
Sure.
Great. So why did you join the Money Stepper Savings Challenge? How did you find out about it? And why were you compelled to join the community we've got going on here?
Well, I think the biggest reason I joined was that it was a good outlet to kind of have some networking around what I'm doing. Not a lot of people in my personal life know that I'm working towards early retirement. You know, you share it with some people and others don't get it. So you have to be careful sometimes talking about it. And so I thought it'd be a good way to bounce ideas back and forth. And of course the challenge and the competition I thought would keep me motivated. So it seemed like a good idea to take a shot and see how it would go. And I've already seen the couple of people in my group F, which we've renamed Group Freedom.
Love it. Very nice. And,
which actually wasn't my idea, but I saw that Mrs. Maroon had already named it that and thought that was neat, and that all of us are working towards, you know, our financial freedom. So, I've already kind of seen the benefit of the community in barely a month.
That's excellent. I think we'll have to lay down the challenge for other people to rename their groups as we go through. I think I'll update this website there. So if we've got group A, B, C, D, E, Freedom, G, I think a few other people might get a little bit jealous, so they might set their own names. That's great. And I think that's a driver for a lot of people who have joined the challenge, is the idea of networking, because sometimes in your day-to-day life, the people around you, the people that are closest to you, like you say, some people don't get it, or some people just aren't interested. So to be able to find people who are kind of a kindred spirit and who are driving towards those same goals, yeah, it's a really big thing. So I'm glad you're kind of experiencing that as well as I am from my side. Superb. So what are your goals that you've set for 2015?
Well, I set, I think, one realistic and one stretch goal. I put in a 30% increase for my net worth and a 65% increase for my savings rate, or a 65% savings rate. And I think the savings rate is going to be harder for me to achieve, just because with two little kids, lots of things can come up, and, you know, hopefully not a third kid, but, you know, there's a possibility that can really wreck your savings rate quickly, so...
I think a 65% savings rate is fairly ambitious for anyone, so very impressive stuff. And is that something that you have achieved in the past, the 65%, or is that a kind of a, you say it's a stretch goal, is that a big jump from what you were seeing in 2014?
I think the net worth is pretty similar to last year. The savings rate's a little more aggressive. In the past, I hadn't really tracked it as directly. I'd kind of set more goals around specific things like max out my 403B or increase the college savings account. So I hadn't done more of a macro level goal.
Right.
But I tried to look at around what I achieved last year, and it was in the low 60s. So I tried to push and push it up a little bit.
That's excellent. And it's good to have those other little goals at the same time, those more specific short-term goals to invest in a certain retirement account or a certain savings account. So I hope everyone in the challenge is still keeping those goals. And as we mentioned in the goals episode, that just helped build towards these larger goals, as you say, these macro goals of net worth and savings rate. So what's your focus for the challenge in 2015? To be able to get to that savings rate, are you looking to cut back on expenditure? Are you looking to be a little bit more careful with your investments to improve that your savings there? Or is it just a case of allocating your income more appropriately to savings? What is it you're focusing on?
I think it's a lot of all of those. But for the main part, my first immediate goal is getting rid of the last little bit of my wife's student loans. She's quite a bit younger than me and finished her schooling later, so my mine have been gone for a long time, but just I'm excited to make that last payment and for us to go out to dinner and celebrate. So those should be done as soon as we get our tax refund. After that, it's kind of a mix of really maximizing investments, trying to keep expenses at the level they're at, and then I have to start paying off a 0% solar loan I did to get my solar installation sooner than I planned. And the last goal is really to not drive my wife crazy with expense review questions, because I tend to question everything we're doing, and I need to make sure I balance that with her expectations.
So a very wise man. I think that not sending your wife crazy is probably quite a good goal for everyone to have who's married. You mentioned the solar. That's quite an interesting point. That seems to be something that people in the personal finance world and beyond are investing in. I think investing is the key word there rather than just buying. Could you give a little bit of a detail on kind of why you've gone with the solar program and why the loan was the right thing for you to do?
Sure. I'd actually been looking at solar for probably the better part of a year. I'm in a really good spot in California that gets a lot of sun for a long period of time, not a lot of rain.
Are there bad spots in California for sun?
not really. Yeah, good point. Even though a lot of the state rebates are gone, the prices have come down so dramatically in the last couple of years that the calculation just keeps getting friendlier and friendlier in terms of payback and return. So I found a company that's been a roofer for a long time and just offered me an incredible deal. I jumped on it, had it installed and up and going in less than 3 weeks.
Wow.
And have been very happy with it. It's right now, I'm even in the wintertime, the power company actually owes me money. And I chose to add a few extra panels than what I really needed just to make sure that as my kids get bigger and as our energy needs change, that we'll still have our bill completely covered. Yeah. But at this point, I feel like I'll have my payback in less than 5 years. And it's I wrote an article about it where I treat it as a dividend paying stock. It's peeling off a 14% dividend for me each year. And that's just going to grow because the power companies constantly are trying to increase rates.
Yeah, it's a great return. It's a good place to be as well. It's not many people can say that the energy companies owe them money. So that's
right.
That's certainly an excellent thing. And I think you're right that the prices, energy prices just tend to go up, don't they? We've seen recently the oil price has fallen by 50%. I'm not sure what it's done to the energy prices in the US, but I know in the UK that there's been a small drop, maybe 3 to 5%. Based on a 50% decline, but I'm pretty sure when oil prices go up 50%, the energy prices follow suit. So,
exactly. They tend to go up faster than they come down. But I definitely have seen a decrease at the gas pump, both when we were on vacation over our winter break and recently. So I think that's been a good thing, although I doubt people are saving and pocketing that extra money.
No, it's just extra money to spend on the shops, I guess, for a lot of people. So, Chad, what do you think your biggest obstacle is in 2015 to achieving those goals that you've set?
I think the biggest one for me is really unexpected expenses, the potential for us to do either an extending or an unplanned vacation. I really planned for our big one we're taking next month to Hawaii and already had that one all saved up for. It's pretty much paid off, or we're using points for pieces of it. But at some point later in the year, we may feel like we need to reward ourselves for our achievements. And, you know, if I can't use points, there may be some expenses there. And just, you know, with the kids, you never know. I hope we're not going to rent ponies and bounce houses for their birthdays. But, you know, sometimes you get a little carried away with that stuff. So it's really trying to rein ourselves in on that and get good value for the money we spend.
Yeah, it's tough sometimes, isn't it, keeping to a planned budget when you're talking about things that you enjoy, holidays and the kids' parties and such. But yeah, it's an important thing to do to make sure we don't veer away too much from our planned expenditures, to have a budget for those kind of things. And if you know, we feel towards the end of the year we really do need to take a vacation, then set a new budget for that and understand what that will do to our net worth and to our savings rate for the year.
Yeah, you really have to plan in some fun money for both you and your spouse. And if you don't get the buy-in from your spouse on it, then you're not going to make it. And if you aren't realistic about how much you need to spend on your hobbies and the things you enjoy, then you're not going to make it. So I think we probably give ourselves maybe a little bit too much, but at least we know that we're going to meet the goals we set because we didn't under budget in that area.
No, that's really good. That brings me back to something you said earlier around paying off the last of your wife's student loan, and the fact that you plan to celebrate that afterwards. I think that's a great thing that you have this fun money built in, and that there's this idea of celebrating certain achievements and certain goals, because if not, it really becomes quite a long chore, doesn't it?
Yes.
Matthew, so this is a question I asked Ryan and Robbie when they were both on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. And it might not be something everyone has, but I'd just like to ask you if you have one. It's the idea of this financial dream. So what, in the long term, we're striving towards, and for me, I've got an image in my head, and it's, I've said it before on the podcast, but it's enjoying great steak, it's drinking lovely wine with my friends and family, because I've retired early and I'm sitting on a lovely balcony of my home in the south of France. It's nice and sunny. I've probably got those solar panels installed because of the sun.
Right.
And I have this long-term financial goal, and having this image in my head really helps me in the short term, and it really helps me think about unnecessary expenditure or anything that I'm doing that I might not necessarily 100% want to do in the short term, but I know it's helping me in the long term. Do you have anything similar? Do you have a financial dream?
I was thinking of buying the house next door to you, because that sounds like a pretty good plan. For me, I think ideally it's having time for me to to sit back and watch the markets, and I just enjoy, you know, reading up on what's going on in finance, and then being able to coach my kids' basketball teams and do some slow travel with the wife and the kids. One of the blogs I read is The Root of Good, and Justin was posting about his week or two long trip that he took, and it was just really neat to see that he had the ability to do that because he didn't have to worry about vacation time. It was all vacation time for him. And I think the other part of that list, and this may not work out as I planned, but is, you know, getting to play more golf, which I just don't get to with the kids right now. But it would be nice to be able to play golf while they're at school and then go pick them up and spend time with them.
I'm not the best golfer myself, so that sounds like punishment for me. But it's interesting. The vacation time, it's all around freedom, isn't it? To decide what you want to do yourself and having the financial backing to allow you to have that freedom. So I think that's a great idea. If you can picture yourself making that last putt every 3 times a week or however often you actually want to play golf, then yeah, that's certainly something that might help you, you know, move on from the position you are in at the minute. Okay, so we're recording this on the 5th of February. We'll release it fairly soon afterwards, which means we've just come to the end of January and everyone in the challenge will be submitting their goals. Will be submitting their progress against their goals on the website. How have you done, Chad? How have you got on in January?
I would say I had a good but not great start to the challenge. I had about just under a 2% increase in net worth for the month and achieved a 63% savings rate. I did have a couple of old medical expenses that popped up, you know, with anything related to healthcare. 6 or 8 months later, people are still billing you. So that's eternally frustrating. And paid registration on my car a little earlier than I planned. But, despite those, I still think we made pretty good progress and planned February and March to really make some significant gains.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's dive into those a little bit. So you say around 2% growth in your net worth. So your annual goals being 30% would make it pro rata for January to be about 2.7%. I think that math is right. I've just done that in my head. I hope it's right. So I guess that's pretty much on course, because although you're slightly, from a pro rata perspective, slightly behind, it tends to be with the net worth, with the impact, the effect of compounding that kind of grows throughout the year. So that's great. How did you, a few people when they've sent in their submissions and their comments, especially from the US, have kind of cited falling stock prices. I think the S&P 500 fell by maybe 3.5-4% in January. Did you suffer that as well? Did you suffer that in your calculations?
No, I didn't really see much of a decrease on my asset side. Maybe that's because I was pumping a lot of money into those accounts, so that offset some of the decreases. I'm really overweight Apple, so
okay.
as they go, so my retirement account goes, and that's a anti-diversification message, I guess, right there.
Well, sometimes in the short term that works, isn't it? So I think Apple released their best, or the world record ever results, I think, for quarterly profit in January. So I guess that's helped with your portfolio there.
I definitely get a little nervous the day they announce results to see what's going to happen and how the market's going to react. Really where I saw the gains on this side was reducing liabilities, and that was paying off some debt. And so I think because the market kind of stagnated, I saw more on that side and hope in future months it'll be a little more balanced.
Yeah. And so the paying down of the debt that you've been focusing on, that's focused on your wife's student loans, is it, at the minute?
Yes. And we should have those paid off as soon as we get our taxes completed and get our refunds. We can make the last payment and, like I said, go out to dinner and celebrate.
When do you expect those tax refunds? Is that coming through in the next few months?
I hope to file my taxes this weekend. I'm sort of an early bird on that. And with a large solar credit pending for that install, my refund is more than it would typically be. So I hope that would actually put me on pace to get it before the end of February so I can get an early lead on Group Freedom.
Oh, great. That's a nice little competitive edge coming out there in Group Freedom. I like that. Okay, super. And then your savings rate, 63%, your goal, 65%. So pretty much on course there as well. So that's excellent. Okay. Some other questions. These are the kind of questions we ask everyone who comes on the podcast. So first one is, what's the best piece of financial advice that you've either seen, heard, you've read about, someone's told you about over the past few months?
That's an interesting question, and I had to think about it for a while. But everything I've seen recently on the major media outlets are scare tactic headlines and not a lot of content to back it up. You know, they're depressing. It says no one saves and everyone's going to have to work till they're 70 and Social Security is going away. Just all these bad things.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. And then when I go out and read personal finance blogs of varying types, you know, I read some that are get out of debt, and I read Dividend Mantra, who's building a dividend portfolio. And when you read these different personal finance blogs, they're all about planning for the future and inspiration and overcoming challenges. They're not about making excuses. So to me, the best thing I've financial advice I've read is really ignoring everything that's coming out from anything that's not somebody, you know, sitting at their computer blogging.
Great idea. Some people might argue that gives you too much of a narrow focus, but I think it's a really good thing to have a narrow focus on the people who are being ambitious and being positive and who are really concentrating on improving their long term financial position. Whereas, as you say, in the mainstream media, and this is one of the reasons I personally set up Money Stepper, was my frustration with this is it's all short term, it's all sensational headlines. You know, you see they report on house prices going down in 1 month, and they say the sky's falling. They give those kinds of extreme headlines, and that's a great piece of advice to focus on the information coming out from these personal finance bloggers, because they're the ones in the trenches and they're the ones who, you know, experience this stuff and really trying, and you can get a lot of inspiration from that. Fantastic. So on that point, I guess if you're reading a lot of those, which other resources, other blogs, other websites, but equally anything kind of apps or TV programs, anything really, any resource that you'd recommend to others in the challenge?
I've already mentioned a few of the sites I look at. One of the things I definitely spend a lot of time on is reading and posting on the Mr. Money Mustache message boards. I think there's just a lot of, I don't know if tough love is the right word, but people don't hold back on their opinions. And I think that's good because everyone's there is trying to learn and get better. I do spend a lot of time watching the stocks that I have a stake in, you know, more so than worrying about my index funds and that kind of thing. But Budgets Are Sexy is one site that I like, mostly because Jay Money has his list of net worths, and you, like I just mentioned about the financial advice, you see everybody's increasing theirs by hard work and determination and making changes. I don't see them going backwards when I see Yahoo Finance articles that say that, you know, the sky's falling and the markets are going to tank. So yeah, if everybody manages to keep improving and keep getting better in those times, then I think it shows that any of us can do it.
There's two really good things on Budgets Are Sexy for inspiration. There's that, which is the net worth, and tied to that as well, I don't know if you've seen the Million Dollar Club, where there's a list of people who have specifically submitted their desire to be millionaires. And so they're all striving towards the same goal there. And kind of you can click through to each person's progress and see how they're getting on in their journey to join this $1 million club. That's quite interesting.
Yeah, but both items interest me, but I'm a little afraid to put it all out there right now. So I'm still working up the courage to be that or have that much transparency.
Yeah, I don't know personally if it's a good thing or a bad thing. On Money Stepper, I don't publish my exact net worth and all that kind of things. I mean, for security reasons, perhaps. But I think that's why we designed the challenge, the Money Stepper Savings Challenge, as we have, because you can have any net worth, any information. All we look at is your percentage increase in your net worth on the savings rate. So hopefully that, whilst giving quite a lot of transparency in how you're kind of tackling your personal finances, it doesn't give too much information away on what they actually are.
Well, I think that was one of the things that would increase the participation rate, is because people don't feel like they're, if you're competing against someone that's already a millionaire, it wouldn't motivate you much. But the fact everyone's looking at percentages and grouped the way they are, I think, is really helpful.
Superb. Okay. I've got two more questions here for you, Chad, because last time on the podcast we had two guests, Ryan from Debt Free Hustle and Robbie from Mr. Captain Cash. And each week we kind of roll forward the question. So we have the new guest answer the question from the previous episode. So Ryan's first question was, how do you break bad financial habits? Is that question was, what tips do you have to help break bad financial habits? For example, credit card use, living beyond your means, etc. Do you have any advice there for Ryan?
For me, the biggest thing, whether you're trying to do it cold turkey or just make changes over time, is if you don't set a realistic goal, you're not going to last long. You won't have a chance. And sometimes people overshoot and try to make such a massive change that it's just not possible. So I almost want to say baby steps are important. But I think really getting something that you can hold yourself accountable to is really key.
Yeah. We had a comment on the post we made last time about accountability. It came from Mr. Zombie, and he suggests that about the small steps. He says, to stop bad habits, it's no use going cold turkey if you know that's going to break or revert to your old habits. Take it slow. If you like a challenge, you could go for it, but just make sure you always hold yourself accountable. So I think that kind of agrees with what you're saying there, Chad. And Robbie's question was, if you got any good tips to reduce household expenditure and related expenses, so insurance and groceries, he'd mentioned as examples. I guess one that we've already mentioned is your solar and how that the impact that's having with the energy prices. And is there anything else outside of your solar installation which you could recommend to Robbie?
Well, I would say on groceries, I'm definitely not a good example. We really struggle with our food costs. We don't buy a lot of prepackaged foods, but we do buy just a lot. So we're still working on that. I do have a pretty stressful job, so I sometimes go out to eat for lunches, and that pushes our costs up too. And so I'm working on taking my lunch more often. Mm. I think the piece of advice I might be able to actually give a good example of is I recently kind of weaned myself off Amazon and realized I was jumping on there and buying things kind of because it was really easy.
It's way too easy, isn't it?
Yeah. And I wasn't trying to go through a couple other steps or a thought process of how I could either fix something or find another way to do it. And what I was very proud of something that happened recently. Well, I wasn't proud of the fact that it happened, but how I resolved it. My nice upright washer broke. And at first I was like, well, we should just call someone. But then I thought I'd actually try to figure out what was wrong with it, jumped online, found the user guide, saw how to put it in test mode. I was able to figure out what error it was giving, did some web research again, and found out that it was a less than $20 part that I needed, and was able to get that. And a couple days later, when I got it in, was able to take the pieces apart, put it in, and the washer works like a dream. And I estimate instead of $20, it probably would have cost $150 to $200 to have someone come out,
wow,
spend the time, analyze it, and fix it. So
I'm impressed. Handyman, Chad.
Yeah, it's not my MO. I could take apart a computer, but not a dishwasher or a clothes washer. So it kind of motivated me to try that again in the future. So went out on Amazon this week after my wife dropped her iPhone and bought a repair kit to fix the screen myself for about $50. I think it costs around $150 to take it into Apple. So I was so motivated by fixing the washer that I thought I'd try it with the phone as well. And I actually have it sitting in front of me and haven't tried it yet, but I hope that will work as well.
Yeah, good luck with that. That's impressive. That's something you don't really see many CFOs doing, getting their hands dirty in the washing machine. I've been working in the finance industry myself for a few years, and I know how useless I am, and my colleagues tend to be with those kind of hands-on jobs. So, impressive.
Right, it's much
stuff.
Easier for us to fix spreadsheets than household appliances.
Indeed. Great. Right, so let's roll forward that question then. What question have you got for the audience, Chad? So everyone who reads the site, everyone who's in the challenge will see the question, and hopefully they'll leave some comments, and equally the next person that we'll have on the podcast will answer it. So is there a question you've got for the Money Stepper Savings Challenge community?
Yeah, and it actually goes back to the fun money topic we discussed earlier. It's how do you keep motivated to save but not reward yourself too often to still be a saver versus a consumer? And additionally, how is that impacted by your spouse or significant other? Because you know not everyone views money the same.
Yeah. That's a great question. Really good. So it's kind of how to find that balance between the two, between rewarding yourself and going towards saving. Because, yeah, I know for me in the long term, if I put everything towards saving and I don't spend anything on enjoying myself, then I'll probably have a blowout in 1 month or a certain other month, which is unbudgeted. So it's not a healthy way to approach things. And definitely a good point about the spouse or partner or significant other there. Great. So to see that question, just head on over to the show notes this episode, which will be at moneystepper.com/early retirement ahead, the name of Chad's site. And thanks so much, Chad. It's been a pleasure having you today. Thank you for all the ideas and for just being part of the community, and specifically for being part of Group Freedom.
Thank you for having me, and I appreciate you getting up so early to call back a day behind to talk to me.
Yeah, it's been very confusing this morning when we've been setting this up. I'm currently in Montpellier in France, and so the call here was at 5:30 a.m., which was a completely different day in California. It was still only, was it 8:30 p.m. your time when we started?
That's correct.
Yeah, so kind of struggled to get a head round good morning, good evening, and what did you get up to today, what are you doing today? But we got there in the end. Lovely. Okay, well, thanks very much, Chad.
All right, have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye. Good stuff. Well, I hope you all enjoyed that interview with Chad. I know I did. I think we got talking about some really interesting points with him. Particularly interested about the solar panels there. As we said in the interview, here in Montpellier, it would probably be quite a good idea. I'm sure there'd be a good return on investment, as they are in California. Not so convinced where I live up in the north of England, whether it'd be as quick a payback period. But with falling prices, you never know, they might be a viable option. So certainly something everyone could look into. And he seems to be doing pretty well with his results so far. His savings rate is about there, and you know, pro rata, we say that for each month, but actually people's net worth will tend to go up as a percentage from a starting point higher in the later months than in the earlier months due to the effect of compounding. So he's right on track. So well done to Chad, well done to all of you who are also plodding along nicely after the first month. Well done. Now, let's have a look at the good news article of the week. And this good news article of the week is from the mainstream media, which is strange to me. I don't usually like any articles from the mainstream media. I don't like short-termism of the articles, as we said in the interview with Chad. But this one is from Time magazine, so time.com/money. It's an article titled "How to Save More for Retirement Without Saving an Extra Cent." And it talks about how, you know, people save a lot of money, they cut back on as many things they can. But there's an idea about how you can save money in your pension, but also actually save money just through any kind of investing you make. And it's looking at your investment fees. Now, we make a big point on Money Stepper about how we support passive investing rather than active investing. And investment fees is one of the main reasons for that. And this looks at an example. It says, say you're 35 years old and you earn 50 grand a year. You receive annual 2% raises and you contribute 10% of your salary to a retirement account. And that money in your retirement account will earn 7% returns a year. So a fairly realistic situation. It says if your annual expenses were 1.5% in that retirement account, by the time you're 65, your total will be $465,000. Now it says, what about if you could cut those expenses from 1.5% to 0.5%? And it's certainly achievable if you invest in the long term in low cost market tracking ETFs or index funds. And it says that if you could maintain that 7%, which is certainly achievable, then by cutting your investment fees from 1.5% to 0.5%, the total amount you'll have in your retirement account when you hit 65, 30 years later for a 35-year-old, instead of being $465,000, will actually be $550,000. So almost $100,000 more. How it looks is, it says, well, that's the same as instead of saving 10% a year, to be able to achieve that, you'd actually have to contribute 12.3% of your pay every year. So by reducing your investment fees by 1%, it's actually saving you having to contribute 2.3% more of your pay. So it's a big advantage to be able to cut those investment fees. If you want to learn more about the difference between active and passive investing and why we favour passive investing, just go onto the moneystepper.com website and search for passive investment, or just look in the stock market section, you'll see an article on that. I think everyone should read it. Everyone who currently actively invests, either through buying stocks and shares themselves or equally through index funds that charge quite high investment fees. I'm not saying everyone should invest in the same way, but it's certainly important to consider these low fee index funds and ETFs as part of your investment strategy. Now time for the bad piece of advice of the week. Well, today for the bad article of the week, the bad piece of advice, I was torn between two separate articles. One of them wasn't really an article. One was the fact that on Google today, it highlighted Twitter's announcement of their Q3 earnings tonight after hours and what impact that might have on the Twitter stock price. And it had three different articles about different recommendations from stock analysts or commentators on CNBC or any other TV finance channels. And within the first three articles, they had a strong recommendation to buy Twitter before the results because they were expecting good things, a recommendation to wait until tomorrow, make your decision after the results, and a strong recommendation to sell Twitter because they're expecting poor results. So three articles, three completely contradictory pieces of advice. How anyone's supposed to make any decisions based on that, I don't know. And as we've just seen in the good piece of advice, it's probably best anyway to stay away from this kind of short-term trading. But I've decided to go with an article that actually isn't based on investing, but rather on property prices. It's one of my favourite things to see in the media. Favourite because I kind of despise it quite a lot. And it's how the mainstream media always report every single month on what the house prices are doing in that month. 1 month is such a short-term way to look at things from house prices that, you know, these things go in cycles of 8, 10, 15, 20 years. Yet, because the newspapers, I guess, need something to write about, they decide that every time information comes out from the house price index or from the ONS or whatever regarding this matter, they have to report on it. And it's a headline from the Daily Mail today, and it says, "House price growth bounces back in January as homes gain another £3,800 in 1 month alone." Now, the detail of the article throws in some figures. Wow, house prices have gone up by that £3,800. It's the highest increase in a month since 2009, 2% increase in January. Annual house price growth has also picked up. Well, that's kind of obvious because compared to last month, if January is a very good month this year, then of course the annual year-to-date up to January compared to the annual year-to-date for December would be better. It talks about how, again, house prices in the 3 months of January are higher than the last preceding 3 months. Again, fairly obvious. It then goes to give reasons why this might be the case, and it says it's helped by recent declines in mortgage rates, which are hitting record lows, the reform of stamp duty, and the combination of the fact that real earnings have exceeded low inflation rates. Now, you know, how they can draw these conclusions that because house prices have gone up in 1 month, it's because of these things, and how, if you think the individual person on the street who's buying a house has suddenly gone, oh look, last month for the first time in 6 years, the average salary in the UK has gone above the inflation rate, I'll go and buy a house. It's just absurd. And it's really unhelpful reporting in my eyes. They actually then go on to quote Martin Ellis, a housing economist, who's much more sensible than the author of the article. He concludes that it's too early to draw any firm conclusions. He actually goes on to say that in January, because generally there's less house sales in January, it's a slow month for house sales. People have just been busy at Christmas. They haven't been planning moving house. It's not the kind of time that families move into a new house in January. People tend to prefer moving house in during the spring, early summer, not in the midsummer months, but then again in the autumn. He said it's not particularly unusual. House prices can be particularly volatile in that month because of low volumes. And for instance, 2007, 2.3% increase in January. 2009, 2.4% increase in January. It's not unusual. So basically there's a whole article, several hundred words, just to say that, you know, house prices in January have gone up by what they have done in the past. Doesn't really say anything. There's no real reasons why. It's just what happens in the short term. You get these fluctuations. There's a funny little comment as well on one of the paragraphs. It says prices had started to cool off in the second half of the year as House 100 rejected ever increasing asking prices. So, suggesting that as house prices were going up, people stopped buying, and so the house prices were coming down. But now they've hit the new heights. So why are people still buying houses? It wouldn't make any sense in that explanation. It's kind of an article for the sake of publishing an article. So, again, don't make your financial decisions based on these articles. Don't look at day-to-day reporting in the short term of things like house prices, of things like stock price of individual shares, or even of the wider market. Think about the long term, plan for the long term, invest for the long term. Everything you should be doing should be looking towards that longer term. Right then, I think that'll do us for this week. Usual drill. 5 stars reviews on iTunes will be gratefully received. If everyone in the Money Stepper Savings Challenge could please submit their results as soon as they can for January, we can get a nice summary of everyone's results up on the website. We can all have a nice good chat around that, see how everyone else is getting on, get some motivation from other people, keep that all going. If anyone wants to come on to the podcast in a fortnight's time to have a bit of a chat, have a look over their January results. By that time, you can maybe look towards February, see how we're doing after 2 months, and just get in touch. It's always good to have other people on. This is a community where we're talking to each other, so you don't have to have a site. You don't have to have done podcasts before, whatever. Just give me a shout and we can get something set up. So thanks again for listening. Thanks again for being part of the community. It's greatly appreciated. And as ever, keep on climbing.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.